and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Violent crime is declining nationwide. Why many Americans don't believe it. A wrongful conviction and 10 years in prison leads to a record verdict. Marcel Brown joins us for his first sit-down interview. And a local artist honors the history of house music in a new public mural. And now to some of today's top stories. The political dogfight for control of Chicago public schools has escalated ahead of tomorrow's Board of Education meeting, where members could have to pick a side. School CEO Pedro Martinez is fighting to hold on to the job Mayor Brandon Johnson wants to remove him from. Meanwhile, a coalition of prominent Latino activists are backing Martinez. One of the rifts between Johnson and Martinez is over the mayor's calls for the district to borrow $175 million to cover a pension payment. Martinez has rejected that idea. Today, Governor J.B. Pritzker says he's staying out of the dispute, but did weigh in on borrowing.
Borrowing to pay for operating expenses in a business, in government, et cetera, is not a great idea unless you know how you're going to pay for that, because it's going to come due.
Questions over the leadership of CPS come as the district is negotiating a contract with the Chicago Teachers Union. Police say neighbors in Little Village who were traumatized by last weekend's mass shooting can receive help tomorrow from the department's third emergency assistance center.
I think what's important about the emergency assistance center is when we have these outrageous shootings, when we have multiple people hurt, a lot of times it's difficult to know where to go to get those services. And we want to make sure that we provide an area within the community that people can come and get those services.
The Chicago Police Department says the center will be open from 4 to 7 p.m. tomorrow at Farragut Career Academy. It's in response to a shooting over the weekend that killed a 32-year-old man and critically injured six others. But CPD says it's not just for people affected by that shooting, but for anyone who's experienced violence. For the first time, Midway passengers can kick their feet up in a premium new airport lounge. The lounge is open to all travelers, regardless of airline or class of service, and is located near Gate B1. The 3,300 square foot, $5 million lounge costs passengers $50 for a day pass or a membership with various lounge networks. The lounge space includes workspaces with charging stations and complimentary refreshments, and proudly serves local food and drinks like beer from Revolution Brewing and Two Brothers and spirits from Koval Distillery. If you're gonna be the worst, you might as well be the best at it. We're, of course, talking about the White Sox, which are now on the verge of becoming the worst team in modern Major League Baseball history. Sorry, Sox fans. The Sox won last night, but only Sox fans would be disappointed when their team loses. Yeah, they're booing, but if the Sox lose just one more game, one more, y'all, they have five left, they'll surpass the 1962 New York Mets for most losses in a season. Team goes to bat for history again tonight when they face the Los Angeles Angels at home at 6:40. Good luck, team. Up next, the gap between crime stats and feeling safe, right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Crime is down overall, both in Chicago and around the country. So why doesn't it feel that way to some people? With crime and safety a political football this election season and what can seem like a barrage of violence on social media, the gap between perception and reality is sometimes a wide one. Joining us to talk more about that are Tenny Gross, CEO of the Institute for Nonviolence Chicago, And joining us via Zoom, Takenya Nixon, attorney supervisor at the Cook County Public Defender's Office. We should note we did invite the Chicago Police Department, but they declined. Tinny and Takenya, thanks to you both for joining us. Let's start with a little bit of context, okay? So most crimes saw a decrease within the last year, including homicide, which was down 8% from last year, robbery down 10%, and theft down 4%. Now, the changes are even bigger compared to 4 years ago for homicide and burglary, not so much for some other crimes. Question to both of you, Tinny, to you first. Why do you think that most of the public believe that crime has gotten worse?
There is a lag between sort of the numbers and perception. And B, I think Cranes did a story this week. Someone got carjacked on the north side. For them, this is a traumatic event. I was at the hospital supporting my friends from Little Village, New Life, till 3 in the morning. It's really, really traumatic and painful. So those events are still far too much. We're doing good and positive things. We probably will touch on that. But we're still far from other European and other countries in terms of levels of violence.
To Kenya Nixon, same question to you. Why do some people in the public believe that it's gotten worse?
Well, I think it's because of the narrative that is being placed out there about especially Chicago crime. Yes, all you hear really on the news, on social media outlets, is that, as was mentioned, there are carjackings that are happening. There are robberies that are happening. And so people are only highlighting and focusing on the things that are currently taking place and not really looking at the numbers to see that the crime has actually decreased.
It seems to me that there's also sort of, if there's a constant drip, drip, drip of, as you said, the carjacking here or the break-in or the shooting there, that might have an effect. But also it is a personal experience. If you experience it, then to you, it's happening with frequency.
I mean, we see what we're building here in Chicago is close to a miracle. I'm actually something to be proud of, Illinois, from the governor to the speaker, to the president, all the way down. We're building a civilian architecture that involves now almost 2,000 people, most of them with backgrounds, who are involved now in positive activities, who are getting stipends. We have tonight 20 of our staff are working towards a BA degree. These are people who had backgrounds who had no hope. What do you want in your city, hopeless people or people with hope? So we're working, but this we know it's going to take 15 years. And when we have their daily shootings that my teams respond to and we stay up at night or during the day, those are painful. The mothers will lose their kids. Another part is we have seen an escalation of weaponry, the bullet velocity, as well as the amount of switches. So you can build all that good. There's other setbacks and threats to what we're trying to build, a more sophisticated system. So we are by no means anywhere close to our goals. But what is happening in Chicago now is 100 funders, business community, they're raising more than $100 million to do this work. The rest of the country is looking at us. There's something actually we can't. You talked about the White Sox. We're actually doing the opposite. There's as someone who came from the East Coast to work in Chicago and loves this city, I'm very proud of many sectors. It's not just one sector. It's not just the community, which is really working and always worked hard. The business and the foundation community now are really working hard to change the narrative and the results, the impact. We don't want to change the narrative without real facts.
So a recent Gallup poll found that more than three quarters of Americans think crime has increased nationally in the past year. To Kenya, a lot of the conversation around public safety has to do with access to guns, especially illegal guns. And Tinny, you just mentioned a moment ago the changes in weaponry and there are reports of an increase in casings that are being found at shooting scenes. Chicago's homicide rates are down, but gun-related arrests are rising. To Kenya, what's the story there?
So what I've seen working as an assistant public defender here in Cook County is that although the gun-related arrests are increasing, they're for possession only. And a lot of times, people who are being arrested for the possession of a gun have a firearm owner's identification card and are being accused of carrying it within their vehicles improperly. So while the numbers seem to look like people in Chicago are just carrying guns, and that the gun arrests are on a rise. The people who are being arrested are, for all intents and purposes, law-abiding citizens who have been, you know, given a firearm owner's identification card, and just need the additional training as to how they should carry that weapon when they're inside of their vehicles.
Okay. Tanny, what's the role of the police and trust in the police in the perception of crime?
Well, illegal activities and organizations thrive when there's no legitimacy to our government. So police reform is extremely important, really, really important, right? It's the most visible arm of our government. And they need to serve, people are taxpayers in all our neighborhoods. They deserve service that is fair, that is not heavy-handed. And I think, again, the business community is raising resources to really push police reform and modernize what is going on. There's a lot of hardworking people in the police department, but there's still some flaws from the past that we need to get right.
What kind of, you work closely with CPD on this, and you're an advocate, of course, for police reform. What kind of reforms would aid in improving public perception?
I think that when do you need to rely on partners, treatments that are not law enforcement, as opposed to just an arrest as a treatment, right? An arrest, let's say you will reduce violence by 10% by policing or by all the civilian alternatives. When you reduce crime by policing 10%, let's say they're equal, this is going to be jail. That's more expensive. This is removing a dad, maybe, or a mom from the house. Maybe the kids are evicted now. It's a lifelong consequence. 10% by group like ours or people who deal with narcotics and addiction, now someone is staying in the economy, they're staying at home, they're maybe improving their life. A very different outcome, two different treatments. So the public health community treatment is really important to strengthen in a city that will function well.
To Kenya, how do you think most people perceive or misperceive the criminal legal system?
So I believe people who are not involved in the criminal legal system have this idea that it works. And the unfortunate part is the criminal legal system as it exists today is rooted in racism. And that if you look in the courtrooms, at least in my experience, if you look in the courtrooms, you see nothing but Black and brown people who are being accused. As if only Black and brown people exist in the city of Chicago. And so it gives this appearance and the idea, and it forwards this narrative that Black and brown people are criminals and that we need more policing in those particular areas. And then so people are thinking like, oh, the system is working. It's getting people, you know, who are committing crimes off the street. Yes.
Sorry to interrupt, but obviously, I mean, a subject or a segment about perception and misperceptions, there's going to be, you know, lots of different ways that people judge and misunderstand the criminal legal system that I know you spend a lot of time working in, and Tanny Gross, that you spend a lot of time working on. Sadly, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks to the both of you for joining us. And for more context on crime numbers and other complicated issues, check out our email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan. You can sign up at WTTW.com/newsletter. Up next, a record award after a decade behind bars. A Chicago man made history when he received a $50 million verdict against the city of Chicago earlier this month. Marcel Brown was 18 years old when he was convicted of first-degree murder in 2008. He was exonerated 10 years later. He sued the city over his wrongful conviction. Rather than the case settling, a federal jury awarded him this record-setting amount. Here to talk more about his story are exoneree Marcel Brown and John Lovey, attorney and founding partner of the civil rights law firm Lovey and Lovey. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Are congratulations in order? Do you say congrats for an award like this, Marcel? When you learned about the jury's decision, what was your reaction? What did it mean to you?
I was crying. So when I learned about it, I thought they said $14 million, until my attorney told me it was $50 million. So I was shocked.
So you misheard it. I mean, you were crying over the $14 million, and then you learned that it was even more than that.
Yes.
A lot more.
Yes.
What did it mean to you?
It meant everything to me, because it was like really the first sign of me getting justice for everything I went through.
$50 million in justice?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was kind of my way of, the trial was like my fight to getting my freedom back.
Okay, I want to come back to that because I want to ask John sort of same question to you. You handle these cases frequently.
We do.
What does $50 million say to you?
Well, it's a record. Nobody, a single plaintiff has never received that much from a jury in the United States.
And federal or state?
Ever, anywhere. Ever. And arguably the largest one in history, if not the planet, because the United States has got more of these than other countries. So what it says is that this jury saw a great injustice here. You know, Marcel Brown was 18 years old, and he was convicted of something he didn't do. And Chicago's had a problem with wrongful convictions, and it seems to be a recurring problem, and I think people are done with it.
Let's back up and share a little bit of your story. Marcel, you were arrested at the age of 18 in connection with a murder. It was a coerced confession that was used to convict you. First, what kind of interrogation tactics did the police use? What happened?
I used a lot of practices. They turned my attorney away. They lied. I kept telling them the truth, and they kept saying, well, we don't believe that's the truth. We want to hear the truth. We know the truth. We got 20 witnesses saying this, 20 witnesses saying that. So I tell them something else, and they, oh, that's not the truth. You know more. You know more. They just kept pressing.
Oh, go ahead, John.
And, you know, this is a 31-hour interrogation, which is a real outlier. This is an 18-year-old boy. He didn't sleep. They interrogated him all night, kept him up the next day. And the confession is like on his second all-nighter. You know, the conditions were such that they overcame his will.
And I guess at what point, Marcel, did you sort of go from resisting to just, I'll say what they want me to say?
I believe in day two, all the way up until day three. That's around
was
the time.
It something that happened, or was it just I'm tired?
I was tired probably 6 hours in.
Yeah, so exhausted by the time you got to to the confession.
It was the mind games they was playing, so they'd go here, go there. Oh, that stuff got to go. You want to go home, that has to go. And you say anything else, oh, don't say that. I'm like, that's the truth. Oh, we want more of the truth. So I didn't know what to do.
Ultimately, they tricked him. You know, he's just a child. These are grown men who have done this 100 times. And they made him think that his path out was to cooperate. And, you know, he told them on videotape many, many times, this is the truth. And they made it clear to him, you're not leaving this room until you tell us a different truth. And that is what's interesting about the case, Brandis, is that it was on videotape. You know, Illinois passed this statute in the early 2000s so that we don't have to argue anymore what happened in the room. Because a lot of times people come out of that room and like, this is what happened. The police say, no, that's not what happened. The Illinois legislature passed a law that not just videotape the very end, because that's what they would do. They'd work with somebody for 30 hours and then get a confession on videotape. After early 2000s, the entire interrogation had to be on videotape. So the jury was able to see the whole sequence of how it went down.
So I want to fast forward a little bit because there's a lot to talk about in a limited amount of time. We know that you spent 10 years in prison before you were exonerated, which means you were young when you went to prison. John, a question for you. Many of these cases, because we cover this a lot, city council approving another settlement for another wrongful conviction. This one didn't settle. Why not? It went to a jury.
It went to a jury, and you know, it takes two sides not to settle, but the city offered less than $3 million. You know, that they did not think they had exposure here. That was a miscalculation. You know, Marcel could have accepted that or decided he's going to go get justice, and that's what he did. You know, I realize politically sometimes the city gets criticized for settling, sometimes they get criticized for not settling. In my opinion, they don't do a good job of appraising the risk. They probably should settle more than they do because, you know, there's a lot of risk in a case like this.
What did you have to prove at the trial as far as constitutional violations and witness manipulation being included?
We had to prove that the police intentionally violated his rights, not just that he was innocent, but that they had coerced his confession. That was the primary claim, that they had fabricated evidence.
Marcel, you were young when you went to prison. How has that impacted you?
Prison kind of shaped me in a traumatic way, like kind of messed my brain up. I suffered from depression. I came home to nothing, so it was like an 18-year-old kid coming back out, but I was really a grown man, so I came home to a lot of responsibilities that I didn't know how to really cope with society because I had no experience of it.
Prison is really no place to grow up, but we know that it happens.
The being a man in prison probably is who can create the most violence. So being a man in the free world is, I had no way to go.
Was experiencing this trial difficult for you?
At first, I didn't want to go through with it, but I wouldn't accept what they was offering. But it was like my vindictives because the world finally get to hear my truth and they had to face the facts of everything they did wrong to me. So I got justice in the end. So the trial meant more to me than the $50 million.
This was the opportunity for you to share what happened to you.
Yes, I felt like I got a piece of me back.
Took courage because, you know, they cross-examined him all over again and he had to listen to the city of Chicago call him a murderer for 2 more weeks. And that was a difficult cross-examination because...
Yes, it was.
You know, when he was 18, they did it to him in the room. Now here he is, a grown man. They did the same thing to him at the trial. And Marcel handled it beautifully and with courage and class.
On the public record, the amount, $50 million, it is nearly 60% of what the city of Chicago budgets annually for wrongful convictions, police misconduct cases. Are you concerned at all that the city might try to appeal the award?
They will appeal. You know, they should have settled. The judge recommended, I believe, $5 million. It was a judicial recommendation. The city said, no, we don't want to pay more than three. They don't do a real good risk management. It is a real problem. There is insurance. There is insurance. And so the insurance companies are going to have to be responsible.
Marcel, what's next for you and your family?
Hopefully a great new beginning.
What would you like to do? What's your dream?
My dream is to buy my mom a beautiful house. Make sure my daughter go to a nice school. That's about it.
Okay. Those are good plans. Best of luck to you.
Thank you, Marcel Brown
and John Lovie. Thanks so much for both of you
joining us.
Up next, paying tribute to an iconic genre created in Chicago. But first, a look at the weather. Chicago is known as the birthplace of house music, and a local artist is now making a very public tribute to the beloved genre. The new mural is set to be unveiled at the Chicago Public Library's Uptown branch across the street from the now-closed Gherkin Records. We caught up with the artist, Max Sansing, while he was putting the finishing touches on the artwork honoring the genre's influence and one of its pioneers.
I wanted to do something that was a little bit euphoric in the nature of what house music does to you when you listen to it. Like, if you close your eyes and you listen to a house track and you kind of just vibe out, and like, if you see house heads, man, like, there's always like that one or two or three people by the speaker just losing it. Like, I wanted it to feel like that. I wanted to be this like seamless integration of the flowers that I've used in this piece to kind of represent the different cultures, the colors, the salutes to the DJs who are on the piece and the records. Like, I wanted it all to be just kind of seamless and kind of have like this dreamlike state to it. And so I decided to kind of just give a nod to a particular story out of it. And with Frankie's history with Gherkin Records and with it literally being right across the street, kind of like the portrait that I chose was mainly something where he's at peace and caught up in the reverence of his legacy. I've watched and listened to his music. I've watched documentaries and pieces on him and stuff like that. I want the piece to make people feel happy and joyous, the same way the music makes people feel. House music sounds like just kind of like that theme music for like being able to like overcome or like shake off like the woes and stuff. And that's kind of how I feel about it. It's very celebratory. It kind of has like those feelings of like a good gospel song, you know, and I know that's connected as well. All of that just, I don't know, man, like those who listen to house, like they get it. you know, that kind of feeling of just like, you know, the storm is over.
And Max Ansing was referring to the late, great DJ Frankie Knuckles. You can see the finished product outside the Uptown Branch Library near Sheridan and Buena. And if you're interested in learning more about Chicago's history with house music, be sure to check out the Chicago Stories documentary, House Music, A Cultural Revolution, that airs Friday, November 8th at 8 p.m. And that's our show for this Wednesday night. Stay connected with our reporters and what they're working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. What comes next for migrant care as three shelters are set to close next month? Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight Black Voices, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is committed to supporting diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives throughout the legal profession.